Ok, yeah. Sorry, a bit late. I forgot that my PC isn't old. Computer isn't old working here, so I need to set it up on this computer instead. A couple of messages first. I had a meeting with a reference group yesterday, and unfortunately, what we discussed, there was a 100% repetition of the problems that we discussed as repeated today. So the feedback from assignment 4 is pretty much as we discussed yesterday, that didn't work very well for you, meaning that you just got the scores, no details about what is missing and what is required. And the problem is that the student assistants, they put their notes on a piece of paper, and that paper, it's Blackboard doesn't allow us easily to scan it in, and since they have it on paper, having to retype in everything is not so good. So they prefer, and Dipt and I talked about alternatives, and we can't really find good alternatives. So what they suggest to offer is that you need to come to the lab on Monday and get the paper with the commands and talk to the TAs about what is needed. It's not the optimal solution. We tried to find other ways around this, but we couldn't really find good ways to deal with it. So unfortunately, that's the way it would be. You should, if you can't be there on Monday, you should try to make an agreement with the TAs, because Dipti and I are both going to be away partly next week. So Dipti is going to be, both of us, Tuesday and Wednesday, we are going to be away. So it will be hard. So if you can't do it on Monday, some of you don't have the lab on Monday, but if you just look up in the time planning TP systems, you're going to find the time slot is from 12 till 2, and it's in the A255. But you can look it up anyway if you don't find there. So, and then I was confusing you this Wednesday. I was here this Wednesday, but I'm not going to be here next week. So there won't be anything on Wednesday next week. On Thursday, we're going to do some security. Now, where we are at in terms of XML is that we are today going to cover what you need for the task 1 in the assignment. What we talked about yesterday and the day before was for task 2. Seems kind of reverse, but the reason is that I think it's the DTD is about structure and where attributes are. And I think it's better to cover that first. And now we go into the more specifics, the more details, what is different from the DTD. And we're going to spend most of the time looking at type restrictions, meaning we will define more accurate types than these more general, being a string, being a number. We can make it more restrictive. And we'll talk about integrity constraints in XML, and that we actually need for task 2. How do we define uniqueness or keys, and how can we have references for in keys, if you would like to use that term. So, XML schema. As we saw with the DTD, you could only pretty much just say it's either any string, or it could be a string that is a valid XML name. And we remember that there's some restrictions starting with characters or underscore, and then it could be, after that, it could be numbers and underscores and some other dots. But we may want to say, okay, if we have a data type for percentages, we may say that they should be from 0 to 100%. You can't give a rebate, a negative rebate. Let's say this is a rebate on the price. You can't give a negative rebate, and if you give 100% rebate, they don't pay anything, so you can't give more than 100%. So in that case, you may like to have a number between 0 and 100, Or you may want to say, okay, we have a standard for product names, that product names should be at least 5 characters, or passwords at least 8 characters. You may have these requirements, and we would like to make sure that if we import data into our system, that the data we import are according to that standard. So this is about the length of a name. In old times in Norway, cars would have registration numbers. Modern cars would starting with 2 characters, followed by 5 digits. Now these days you could choose anything, so it wouldn't work anymore. But at that time, you would like to say, okay, a valid license plate number would be 2 characters followed by 5 digits. And these are the types of type specifications we can do in XML schema. We can restrict, so that's why it's called a restriction. We can restrict the value of, let's say in this case, of a decimal number. We could restrict it from being any decimal number to being at least 0 and no more than 100. But in that range, we can accept anything. So what we are talking about here would be, these would be the base types. So restrictions are on top of a base type. So what we say is that basically it could be a decimal, or it could be a string, or it, in your case, it could be a month or a date. And we say that that date should be within the war period. So then we can say what is the range. So for all these restrictions, we start from one of these built-in types and say, in addition to being a string, we have some requirements. It should be mean this length, max this length. It should have this kind of pattern. It should have this kind of structure. And that is what we're going to be looking at. In XML schema, we call these facets. So we have the base type, and we can restrict the base type in various facets. And in many cases, we can add more than one facet. So we can say it should be greater than, it should be less than, it should be max this length. So we have some facets that we can add on top of each other. So we'll go through the most useful ones here, and one by one, and have a little bit of a feel for it. So if you want to restrict the value range, so let's say a date from a start date to an end date, or a number from a start number to an end number, we can use the min inclusive, min exclusive, or max inclusive and max exclusive. So this is min and max, and inclusive means whether it should include that number or it should be greater than. So you can think of it as the inclusive is greater than or equal to, this is less than or equal to, this will be greater than and less than. So it will look like this. So we have here a name or something of a type, percentage type. The base is decimal. And we say mean inclusive is 0 and max inclusive is 100. That means that we allow 0% and we allow 100% and anything in between, but nothing beyond that. So let's see if we can play around with it. So let's say here we have just for 52.1, we could have 99.9, let's add a few more, 100, we could do -1, we could do 110, and we could try with the ABC. So that is the document. I should probably save it, but that's, we could do that later on. Now, here, this is an element, and an element can be of simple type. We agree on that. We remember we had a simple type, simple content, and if it just has some content, we can say this one is of simple type. Let's see. There was a bit more to write here because I forgot to copy this on the desktop, so I had to reproduce this file. So it's a simple type, and it's a restriction. And we need to say what is the base. And in this case, we said it's one of the built-in data types, which is the decimal. And then we define the facets. What are the facets that we are interested in? We say that this is in percentage. We have mean, and let's say inclusive, because we allow mean inclusive, and then value equals to zero. This is the end of it. And we can just copy and say max inclusive. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise us. Simple type there, the end, yeah, simple type. Sorry? That should be 100. Thank you. Okay, yeah. Let's go to the validator. Let's update the document. We choose the file. We have these tags. And validate. Now this one doesn't, the DTD here didn't say much, so we need to update the DTD too. Let's hope I didn't, did we found all my typos? Okay, sequence. Did I have a sequence here? Sorry, I did. Complex type, XS sequence, XS element. I did say XS element, didn't I? Oh, okay. This one is. Sorry, I had. We need to look at it. Let's see here. So what I'm saying here is that this element doesn't have any children, but it does have a child here. Because now I changed the specification. So it does have a different type, because XS element. Let's hope there aren't too many of these. No errors. That's scary. There should be errors. So this document is okay. Tag. Let's see. At the end. Sorry, this was should be tags. So minus 9 is okay, 110 is okay, ABC is not okay. So you see? The other ones are okay. So if you go here, 0 is okay, 52 is okay, 99 is okay, 100 is okay, minus 1 is outside the range, 110 is outside the range, and ABC is not a number. So that's why they were excluded. So before I go on, let me remember to say here that his name is Tags. Okay, so these facets, mean, max, we could use on the value range. But we can also test for a string. So we have min length and max length, and we also have a length. So if you want the string to be an exact length, we can use these min, max, and length facets. So in this case, we can say that the product name should be at least 5 and no more than 25 characters long. I'm not going to show that one. It's not so exciting. Enumerations. You remember that from the DTD, we could enumerate the value of an attribute. So we could say that a month attribute could be January, February, March, April. But we couldn't do that for, if we had the month tag, we couldn't do it for the tag. We could only do it for the attributes. But here, we can have enumeration facets. So it's pretty much the same. We say it's a restriction. Now we need to restrict on a string typically. Because we're going to enumerate values. But we could also enumerate number values, but typically we enumerate string values. So we have milligram, gram, kilogram, for instance. So if we like to do try this, so let's go here, we say milligram is okay, gram is okay, pound is not okay. Let's try something like this. And we go here. Now we say it's based on string. And we say it's enumeration. And value is milligram. So let's do this. Sorry. And gram and kilogram. So we modify the document. And we, let's see, we validate. This will not fail because it doesn't, it's not decimal. So we need to update the scheme as well. So let's choose the new schema. Two errors. Pound is not valid because we said it should be milligram, grams, and kilograms. So this is one of those who are not, the value is not within the facet, and therefore it's not valid. So it's the same error, but there are two reasons. So number one says that it was not a valid facet value, and because of that, it's not a valid value in its own right. So enumeration and any simple type, it can be used for, like we did here, for an element or for an attribute. We could define a new type here, and we can use it wherever we want. You remember that yesterday I was showing you the a type where I had some attributes that I could use everywhere, so it had a value and attribute. It's the same thing here. If you find a new type that's useful, we could just create it as a simple type, give it a name, and we can use it later on in the document. The most powerful is to deal with patterns. Now, this is where those of you, there were quite few, if I remember from yesterday, who has been using regular expressions before. I think there were a couple, were there? Three doing regular expressions. This is not going to be an extensive regular expressions. Oh, sorry, PD, is it? Yeah, right. You could probably find expressions that I would be able to understand there. But I'll just show you the some of the overall, some of the basics, and then if you want to, you could study it. It's quite useful. Using regular expressions is quite useful when you search in texts. So what we do here is that we say that this type, the car registration type, is based on a string, and it should have this pattern. So that's the facet here. The facet is pattern, and it says we should have A to Z, and it means any character in the alphabet starting with A, ending with Z. And the braces here says that there should be exactly two of them. And we should have numbers 1 through 9, one of these, and followed by 4 digits 0 to 9. So that will be the pattern that we accept here. So this is a registration saying starting with two characters, following with a digit from 1 to 9, and then followed with any digit. That would be the valid structure. So this is how we build up. The brace or the brackets here are used to say that they are in a sequence, starting and ending, and it's going to be in the ASCII order. Or UTF order. And then we can add some more. And that's, let's go through it one by one. We can, question? Yeah, only capital letters. So if you want lowercase as well, you would have to do A to Z lowercase as well. That sequence as well. Yes, absolutely right. These are just capital letters. So there's a difference. I'm just assuming that now in the XML world, we know there's a difference between uppercase and lowercase. And in the sequence of characters, there is no lowercase. They are different parts of the encoding. But that's a valid point. So let's see how we build this up. We can look at individual characters. In this case, we can say it's one of these characters. This hat here says that it could be anything but these characters. So if we inside the brackets start with the hat, it means that anything here is in that sequence. Now, if you would like to have any one character from A to C, but not the ones from D to H, we can subtract it here. So it's A to Z minus, so if it's an internal bracket set, then these are excluded. So that will be A to Z minus the letters from D to H. There are a number of special characters that we can use in here that we then need to escape. So if we look for square brackets, we will need to escape them. Of course, we need to escape the escape character, the OR character, the hat, the star, the question mark, the plus, the minus, the dot, and a few more. We need to escape them. So we just need to remember that if we are to use the dot, then we need to escape it. If we use any of the other special characters, we need to escape them. And then there are some character classes. And one of the character classes would be the space class. These would be space characters. Tabs, blanks, these are typically space characters. They just give a space in one way or the other. Small s means that it's a space character. Capital S means that it's anything but a space character. So this is the not operator. If it's capital, it means not, the inverse. Decimal digit, D, lowercase if it's a digit, uppercase if it's not a digit, And then you have Unicode letters. L for a Unicode letter, uppercase only, lowercase only. So this way, if you say this should be any Unicode letter, you could do the P and then L means letter, LU means uppercase letter, LL means lowercase letter. And capital P means anything but, lowercase p means one of these letters. So this is how we can match one character. Now, we can then make more complex regular expressions by adding, by building up into expressions, into building blocks. So for instance, we can put parentheses, and this is as we saw with the grouping of elements when we defined it in the DTD, that we can group it with the parentheses. And the parentheses is just a way to group. And typically we use them to say if there could be many of them, if they could be grouped or repeated, or if they are optional. So if we do the vertical line in between, it means that they are, it's either A or B. AB means that it should start with an A followed with a B. And then of course this A can be replaced with some of the other characters. You could build them up recursively. Question mark, as we talked about with the DTD, question mark means 0 or 1, star means 0 or many, plus means 1 or many. And with the braces, we could say there should be exactly n, there should be n or more, or there should be from n till m. Of the A's. An A may be any space character or maybe any non-digit character or whatever. So, those who have seen regular expressions before don't have to, aren't allowed to answer. But what gets accepted here? Anyone wants to go for suggest if you haven't seen it before? Yeah. Email addresses. So how does it work? Well, it starts saying that the first character should not be the at or should not be a dot. So you start with some other character. Now, as you could think, this is a bit broad. It would accept things that aren't really email addresses. It's too broad. So if you look at the regular expression for a complete or an accurate regular expression for valid email addresses, it's far more complex, far, far, far more complex, because there are so many rules of certain characters, maybe here and there, and but not everywhere. But let's do it in the trivial. So yes, we start with something, at least one character, plus it could be multiple characters that are not dots or at, and then there is a parenthesis with a star, which means that there be one or more groups of what's in here. And what is in here? Well, something started with a dot and then continuing with something that is not a dot and not at. So that would typically be first name dot last name. Or first name dot middle name dot last name. None of them. There's no dot dot, so meaning that there is something empty. There is a dot, at least one character, middle name is at least one character. And there is only one at, and that's here that separates the name from the address, or from the address. So here, you have the at sign, it's going to appear at this place. After, there has to be at least one something that is not a dot and not an at, so there is at least one character, and then followed with at least one group having a dot followed by whatever non-dot, non alphanumeric or at sign. Because it's NTNU dot NO, or it could be IDI dot NTNU dot NO. But it couldn't be another at sign, and it couldn't be two dots with nothing in between. So you see, it is, yeah, it's a quite rude way to say, okay, this has, it looks like an email address because it has a name potentially with middle name and last name separated with dots, and it is at least, it has the top domain and it has a company name under EDU or COM or NO, which are kind of the top level domains. Now, how could we restrict? Let's say that these were old days. Now with NTNU, now we accept 7.5 credits. But in old days, we could have courses would be for at the most one semester, so they could be at the most 30 credits, and they had to be multiple of 5 credits. So 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. How would we make, what facet would you want to use to create such pattern or such a type? It doesn't have to be a pattern. It could be other ways. No, you couldn't use a modular operator. No. If you think about it, could we use the mean and max exclusive? We could say it's an int, has to be at the most or at the most 30, at the least 5. That would help a little bit. Then we know that anything below 5, anything above 30 is excluded. But then we need to add some other facets for the saying that we, in that range we accept only 5, 10, 15, 20. So we could do a regular expression saying we accept 5 and we accept 30. And then anything 1 or 2 followed by 0 or 5, that could be that could be one way around it. You follow me? So you could say it's, or we could do either 0 or 10 or 15 or 20 or 25 or 30, and we could do that in a regular expression, or we could do it in an enumeration. You follow me? Enumeration, we can enumerate the values because there are too many, so you can enumerate them. And we could also do that in a regular expression by listing the values with parentheses and or saying either 5 or 10 or 15. Or we could say it's either 0 or 50 or it's 1 or 2 followed by 0 or 5. You follow me? So these are ways of doing it. Now, let's say we have a user ID where the user ID is either local name, which is 5 characters starting with letter, continuing with letters, digits, underscore, or dashes, or a valid email address, where we could say that what you see up here is the email address. How we do that? Would range help us here? No. Enumeration? No, we can't enumerate all those combinations. So we would need to set up a pattern. And the pattern would be at the top level, either this address here or something else. And that something else, it will be characters, least 5. We need to say the first is a letter, and then at least 4 then of this other set of characters. We can just do the brackets and list all the letters. We could use the Unicode PL, all letters. And if we only, it doesn't say whether it should be upper or lowercase, if you just use lowercase, you could use all lowercase Unicode letters plus digits, underscore, and dash. I think that is enough to give you a flavor, and then you need to work and play around with it. And because we also need a little bit of time to talk about integrity constraints. You remember from the database and data modeling that we taught in the relational model, we talk about entity integrity and referential integrity. Entity integrity means that all objects have a key and the key is unique. So we have primary keys in all our tables. So that's entity integrity. And then we have referential integrity, which means that if we have a value that is supposed to refer to some other object or other key, we need that to be present. It needs to be defined. So uniqueness would be the same as a key. We would like to define a key to make sure that it's unique. And in this case, the interesting thing here, in the same as for the relational database, a key can be a composite key. So if you remember the DTD, in the DTD we could define an ID or an attribute to be of type ID. And then that would be the ID. But in this case, we can say that the ID or the key is actually not an attribute at all, but it consists of two elements. So the value of name and the value of manufacturer would collectively identify this food item. So what we're saying here is that we shouldn't have two food items from the same manufacturer with the same name. It's okay to have two different potato chips. It's okay that Lee's have multiple products, but they should not have two products with the same name, because then you can't really tell what this is about. We could use unique, but we could also use key. Unique and key are kind of synonyms in this case. And in the schema, we need to define uniqueness as a child of an element, because it's the element that's the children of the element that is supposed to be unique. So if you go here, I think in the nutrition XSD, we see here we have the unique. It says that in this document, food items. There is a key on food item, and the food item key, it says that the food, and now we have to think where we are. Where is this XPath? So it says XPath. Where is this located in our tree? It's a child of nutrition. So in the tree, it's defined. On nutrition, there is a unique key defined on the XPath food. And what would that be? That would be all the children of nutrition that have the name food. So that's where the so that's what this means. That's the selector. That's where the key is defined. What is the value of the key? Well, the value is the path name, which is a child then of the selector. You follow me? So the selector is the food, and inside food, the two elements that we're going to use would be the name and the manufacturer. What if this had been an attribute? What do you think could happen here if you want to use an attribute rather than an element for the key? Would it work? Would it work differently? It only says XPath. So what is the XPath to an attribute? Starting with the at sign. So if you just do, so let's say that food had an attribute called ID, then we could just say that the selector food on food items, there should be a field which is the attribute ID, and that should be either completely or partly part of the uniqueness key. So once we have defined uniqueness and keys, yeah, pretty much the same. But keys, we typically use the keys when we have foreign keys to refer to it. So what we have here is that the key here is the employer number key. So in this document, we have you'll find an example of the document in the zip file that I uploaded as an example file. But in this case, we have the tree has a list of employees and a list of departments. And what we're saying here is that there should be an employee, and the key, the uniqueness, should be on the employee number. Then we have a reference, and the reference is in the department. So if you look at the department, then in the department there should be an attribute department head. That department head is referring to this employee number key. So this number here needs to match some employee's employee number. You see the same thing as we did in the relation database. So we had foreign key. We said foreign key is defined on a table. In this case, it's defined on an element or type department. The foreign key is on the attribute department head. The foreign key is referring to this primary key, and this primary key is defined on the employee number of an employee. So it's very similar. The thing we have to worry about it would be to name everything correctly. And there is one more thing we need to worry about, and that is keys and key references must be defined on the common ancestor of a given node. What do I mean by that? Well, these are XPaths. So in XPath, we remember that we could go and visit parents. That's not the case here. It's not a full XPath support. We can only look underneath. We can't look across the branches. So that means if you go here and look, do I have that possibility? I don't know. I'm sorry, because I had it prepared on my computer, but I don't have I have it here. Oh, can we do that quickly? Yes, I think we can. So if we have let's say we have a number of we have a tree like this. Now if we hear if we here define a key and we would like to have a reference to it, let's make a reference here. So this one is referring to it. We need to define the two key entities or the two key element in the schema up here, because this is common parent, or we could do it up here. We cannot define either of them down here. We have to go up. And if we would like to refer, if you would like to refer from here, where do we need to put the definitions of the key and key reference? We have to put it at the very top, on the root. So here. Because otherwise, they will not be visible. So we need to be on a common parent. So then we need to define them up here. So remember that when you do that in the skier logs, and I personally, I like to put here on the top, I define the root element, and then I define all the keys. So if the key is a bit down, I would have to have the XPath being departments, department, or employees, employee, because it will be deeper down in the tree. But I like to have them all here at the top when I define the top root, because then I know that it's all visible from the top. And also, by looking at the top, I find all the keys and key references defined. I like to have it all there, not spread around everywhere else. But that's kind of your choice. But you have to remember that it has to be in the it has to be in the path, or have a common parent, and you have to define it on a common ancestor. Yeah, and there is more to XML that we don't have to worry so much about. Just saying what I think you should bring from today, and this is what you're going to be doing in the assignment, is first think about the facets. So we can make more accurate, we can make restricted types, more accurate type definitions for what we want by taking one of the built-in types, or even our own restricted type, and say, okay, we add more restrictions to it. And the restrictions has different facets. So it could be the length of a string or a value, it could be the number or the value range, or it could be a list of exact values, or we have patterns. And in that case, we need to play a little bit with regular expressions. And in XML, we do have the possibility of using key and key references rather than IDs. And the two most important differences that we saw right now was, number one, here, we can with the key and key references, we can have composite keys. And the keys can be defined on elements, not just attributes. If you use ID, ID ref, they can only be attributes. But if you use keys, we can use any element value